This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
By the Book on BFM 89.9.
Hello and welcome to By the Book with me, Sharmila Ganesan, and my fellow traveller into the realms of books. Clearly.
Yes.
Lee Chui-Lin.
Yes, that's the only kind of travel that most of us have been able to do for quite some time now.
So given that most of us are probably feeling quite a bit of cabin fever by this point, we thought we would use this occasion. April 23rd is World Book Day. We thought we'd use books as a means to travel when we can't do much of it otherwise.
Yeah, so we're kind of subverting the idea of World Book Day to do books that are about the world.
A world of books.
Correct. Because last year we went quite literal. We went full on Don Quixote, mm-hmm. Miguel de Cervantes, and just the very origins of World Book Day. I believe we might have spoken about Shakespeare. I don't know.
We did. It feels like it was, 200 years ago.
Yes, yeah. But at this point, what is time? So, yeah, we thought this time around we would do something different.
Mm-hmm. So, and I think that's something, I don't know whether most readers have this experience. Really, for me, the idea of travel, of discovering different countries, did happen through books and maybe with movies a little further on. But definitely a lot of what I know of the world, even today, really, come from books. And so for me, the idea of talking about books from different countries and what I learned about those countries from those books is quite exciting, and it kind of makes me happy as well, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's also why there's such a huge responsibility that rests on authors and why people get so upset when they feel like their world is being described or taken over in a way that isn't fair because of that strength of words, right? Because fundamentally, it's, for many people, the first encounter of a country is, like you said, going to be not by stepping foot in that country. And I just wanted to bring up before we get into our recommendations, I'm sure you've seen all the controversy surrounding American Dirt.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, which was a book that Oprah Winfrey highlighted as part of her famous, book club, and has since spiraled off this entire thing with people saying that this person had no right to kind of take on, because it's a story of an asylum seeker, is it not? And I think it talks about the journey from Mexico into America. And so I think that there is this tremendous push now, and it comes back to this issue also of authenticity.
Yeah.
About who
gets... Because the author, Janine Cummins, is not a Mexican immigrant herself.
Although she said she did a lot of research, and I believe her. So I think there is this issue of who gets to write about places and who gets to write about certain parts of the world, especially when those parts of the world are very fraught.
Yeah, and it's a question that actually did not come up at all until... I would say not even a decade ago, this wasn't really the kind of fraught issue that it is now. Even a lot of those books that we read about other countries were not necessarily written by people from those countries. Of course, there's the whole breadth and width of colonial literature of basically white men traveling the world and writing about those cultures. And some of them are very good. So that's not to say that they couldn't necessarily work. But in today's world, it gets quite difficult to decide. I have to say, though, that I've quite safely picked authors that were from the countries that that I intend to talk about. Mm-hmm. And maybe later we can talk about the opposite as well, the idea of pretty good books that were written by people who are not from those countries.
Yes, because I have a few of those, I have to say. Mm. So, and I kind of wondered about that a little bit. So, yes, we'll get to that shortly. But before that, I guess... people who are writing about countries where they've lived or where they were from.
Yes. Mm. So maybe I'll kick things off. This was a very formative book for me. It's a book by an author from Sri Lanka. It's called Funny Boy by Shyam Selvadurai. And I think the reason this book resonated so much with me is because it is really one of those coming-of-age stories. I read it myself when I was on the cusp of becoming a teenager. And it's a story of a young boy in Sri Lanka who is coming of age within this sort of upper-class Tamil family. It chronicles, I think, like six episodes between... he's probably about six or seven when the story starts, and he's 14 by the time it ends. It explores his sexual identity, but it's also set in the time between the Sinhalese and the Tamil violence, basically, and leads up to the riots in 1983 that then set Sri Lanka on its years of turmoil and war. Coming from an Indian family, especially in Malaysia, it took me a while to realize that Sri Lankans were actually different from us.
Mm.
And so for me, it was very, very interesting to read about Tamils, but from Sri Lanka, and how different yet similar culturally they could be to my own family. And coupled with the story of a boy who was discovering his own identity as he was growing up, often I think you need that person, that window into that culture as well. I love that book. It's maybe a little bit, because it deals with sexual identity and all that, viewed in today's lens, because this is from, I think, the early 90s, some parts of it may not quite gel with how we think of, identities today, but I still think it's a really good book.
So, interestingly, I also have a book about China, which is not to say that I think that there is always this fascination, right? When you are somebody who is of a certain ethnicity and a certain nationality. Mm-hmm. And you see this explored through people like Amy Tan, for instance, mm-hmm. who's made it her bread and butter to write about being an Asian American in America. And so as a Malaysian first, but also somebody who is only a third generation Chinese person, so my grandparents came from China. And does that make me third generation?
Yes, I think so.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
So
I'm second.
I think you're second.
Yes.
So they have to be born here to be first.
Right. Yeah. So as somebody who is, only second generation, I'm not someone who can claim to, like, in fights with racists to say that my family have been here for a very long time. But, there is still, I think, this fascination about trying to understand how it is that your grandparents lived, trying to understand, in many ways, the country from which your family, sprang.
Yeah.
So, and for a long time, the person that I relied on for that was Pearl S. Buck, who I've spoken about before, right? Mm. I think child of American missionaries who grew up in China, and so she wrote books that were really like embedded in the Chinese milieu. And so for a very long time, that was my exposure. I knew China in terms of dynasties, in terms of peasant farmers in the Good Earth, for instance. And in much the same way as Sweet Valley High mm-hmm. gave way to Stephen King in my life, similarly, Pearl S. Buck gave way to books by, Ma Jian, by contemporary Chinese authors. And the one who began that was someone called Nian Qing, which is the pen name of Yao Nian Yuan, who was a woman who was actually tortured in the Cultural Revolution, because she worked for Shell. And basically, after her husband's death, she was accused of being a spy. She held out. She never ever gave a false confession. She emerged from that. She found out that her beloved daughter had been killed by the Red Guard. So it's a very, very harrowing story. It tells the story of somebody who is really on the wrong side of historical power, of a power shift and being a somewhat powerless person within that. And it gave me insight, I think, into communist China, mm-hmm. Into a different sort of China than reading about emperors and empresses will do. And that book is Life and Death in Shanghai, and it's great.
Mm. I find it quite interesting that both the books that we've picked so far deal with conflict and this sort of difficult turmoil that often happens in many countries. And the next book that I'm going to pick follows that similar vein, except that it's a graphic novel. I've always had a deep fascination with Persia.
It sounds more exotic, isn't it?
Than Iran, that's yeah. true. But yes, Iran also actually remains one of those places that I've desperately wanted to go to. And I still, live in hopes of being able to visit soon, hopefully. And so Persepolis by Marjane Satrapi, I hope I'm saying her name right. It is a graphic novel. It's an autobiographical account of her childhood growing up under the Iranian Revolution. And the name Persepolis, of course, refers to the ancient Persian capital. And something about the form, and I believe Persepolis was one of the first, along with Maus, one of the first those the granddaddies of graphic novels that explored these weighty real life autobiographical issues, you know, and it came out. It came out in 2000, so right in the at that time when the world was also kind of opening up to stories from around the world, and I remember being fascinated by the idea of this deep, like, terrifying story told through the eyes of a what was a 10-year-old when the story starts, but in visual form. And I think that was what really made it brilliant, because I was about 17 when it came out, and I was also just discovering graphic novels at that time. So this book, it allowed me to look at Iran in a very visual way. I love the way the book looked, as well as the story that it told. And I think that added a lot to the experience of the country for me.
Well, so the thing is, right, when you said Persepolis, the immediate books that I thought of in connection to that were the ones by Guy Delisle, which are Jerusalem. I think he's also written another, created another one called Myanmar or Burma. Mm-hmm. I'm forgetting which version of the name he used. But there is something, I believe, about graphic novels, mm-hmm. and how they depict place, mm-hmm. that can be both so evocative and specific, but also very personal, because it depends on where that person lived. Yes. It depends on which part of the city they were in. And so I think between Persepolis, Jerusalem, you know, books like that, which wear their destination on their sleeve, if you were thinking about it, I mean, you could do a lot worse than picking up a graphic novel.
Mm-hmm. We do need to take a quick break, but we are celebrating World Book Day, which is on April 23rd, in our own Cabin Fever struck way, by talking about traveling the world through books. So let us know what your favorite books are from countries other than your own, who your favorite authors are that you turn to at times like these. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or write to us at buythebook@bfm.my.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back. This is By the Book with me, Sharmila and Lynn. And we are celebrating World Book Day today, which is on April 23rd. Not much of globetrotting available to us at the moment. So we are doing it instead virtually through the pages of the books that we read. And we've been talking about this idea of books that introduce particular countries to us. So we ran through a couple of our, I suppose, favorites in the first half of the show. We have a few more that we can talk about. Lynn?
Yeah, so I just wanted to touch on a few specific things, and that is... I have so many. I don't know which to... Okay, I'm just going to talk, I think, about how some of my favorite authors have given me a sense of a very particular part of the world. And I bring this up because recently we spoke about, or I say recently, I think it's been a couple of weeks now, we talked about Stephen King, mm-hmm. and his book on writing. And in that show where we were talking about books that are good to read at this time, another one that came up was actually John Hodgman's Vacation Land, which is based in some ways, you know, it's sort of a loose memoir of sorts. But it just made me think about Maine. Mm. And how
a place that we would have had no access to if it wasn't through books.
No, I don't see myself ever visiting Maine, to be honest.
Yeah, now I really want to. Well, because of Stephen King, really.
That's the thing, right? So I was thinking about how someone like Stephen King, for whom, gosh, I don't know, 90% maybe of his books are set in some variant of Maine, whether real or otherwise, Castle Rock, so on, you know, has given you a very specific sense of small town America, and a certain type of small town America too, because he tries very hard to capture the particular personality of people who live in Maine. The idea of out of towners, the idea of living by the lake. Yeah. And so I just think that there are some authors, because they write so specifically about one specific place over and over and over again, you get to know that place through those works. And so Stephen King and Maine is one of them. And the other is Zadie Smith and London.
Yes. White Teeth is... When I read it, I felt like I could see the places she was talking about.
Yes. And in NW, I never wanted to visit London again. Because her version of London is nothing like what I see on, you know, my fellow Malaysians' Instagrams and Facebooks. Her version of London in that particular book was, you know, rough and tumble, really frightening. And I just think that in a great city, and London is one of the great cities, especially for literature, you know, it's been so rich. It's nice to see London historically morph and change and be sort of translated through the eyes of whoever it is who's writing about them and writing about it. And mm-hmm. so, yeah, Zadie Smith in London, Stephen King in Maine. I just wanted to bring those up.
So I would like to use that as a jumping off point to talk about books that not so much capture a place, but rather really capture the feel of what a particular country's culture, mindset, just that something about a particular kind of people. And there are two books for me that I have that came to mind when I thought about doing the show. One is Kitchen by Banana Yoshimoto.
Oh, yes.
And for me, it's so quintessentially Japanese. You know, it's a story of a girl who was cared for by her grandmother. And then her grandmother passes away and she kind of attaches herself to this young man and his mom, who is who is transgender. It's so Japanese in the way they express themselves in their lives, in the way they talk about emotions and the place of food. I love from the title you'd guess, it's very much about food. Food plays such a part in connecting each other and the meals they have. And in a similar way, there's this book that I read fairly recently. It's called The Year of the Hare by Arto Paasilinna. And he's probably the only Finnish author I've read. It's a book from Finland. And it really captures that part of the world in this. It's a story of a man who hits a hare with his car and it dies.
Oh, a hare.
Yes, the year of the hare, the H-A-R-E.
Right.
And then decides that he's just going to spend a year in the wilderness, away from the law and away from human structure. And he continuously gets into, does weird things and almost gets arrested or gets into deep trouble and just somehow escapes them. And this hare that he hit almost becomes like a totem animal for him. And it really captures that outdoorsy spirit of that. I don't know. It's again a part of the world I've never been to, but I imagine that this is what the Finnish spirit is like. And so, yes, again, books for me that you know help me really think about particular places in the world in a particular way.
So, I just wanted to end, I guess, by touching on something that we opened with, and that is the idea of who gets to write stories mm-hmm. about places. And I bring that up because of two books, one much better than the other. So I'll just get that out of the way. So you have, on the one hand, Graham Greene's The Quiet American, which is a classic for good reason. Graham Greene is a glorious writer. Yeah. If you've not read The Quiet American, then I welcome you to a great book and a book of heartbreak. Mm-hmm. And it really paints Vietnam and Saigon particularly in a very specific way. It's romantic, it's rich, it's also deeply lived, it's very tangible. Mm-hmm. When I first landed in Vietnam, and I live so much closer to Vietnam than Graham Greene did. Well, Graham Greene lived in Vietnam, to be fair, for a time. But in general, right, I'm born here, I should know it a little better. And yet the first time that I set foot in Vietnam, Graham Greene's The Quiet American was what was echoing mm-hmm. around in my head. It's what I kept thinking of. It informed, I guess, how I thought of the place, the sense of romanticism in some ways that I had attached to Vietnam. And then on the flip side of that, you have Memoirs of a Geisha by mm-hmm. Arthur Golden, which, of course,
I don't hate it, you know.
I don't hate it.
Yeah. I had a time in my life, I actually really enjoyed it.
Same. So yeah. I'm not here to diss Memoirs of a Geisha. I am here, however, to say that it has had its fair share of controversy. And it is very much a book. I don't know how well received it would be now. I loved it when I was a teenager. It was marvelous. It was so well described. The characters were relatable. In many ways, I think I wanted this to be that particular version of Japan. I wanted that to be geisha-era Japan. I don't know that it is. You know, it's one of those books now.
And it also makes it somehow difficult to think of it as genuinely Japanese because there's so many things about it that feel wrong. It's such an exoticized view of a man from the West looking at the geisha culture. And then, of course, since then, women who have been geisha have come out and said, this is nothing at all like what we live.
In fact, the main, the geisha that he interviewed for the book has come out to say that A, not accurate. B, I need to sue you because you named people who should never have been named.
Yeah.
So there are some issues with the book and its authorship. But did it make me want to go to Japan? You know, did it?
It did. And I think for... And then, of course, you think of something like Burmese Days, George Orwell. And how beautifully he and starkly he captures that end of the British Raj and how that impacts the communities and the people who lived under it. And then you think, well, what is there to criticize about that, right? Or similarly with Graham Greene, I am not sure that I would have a problem with it. So sometimes I wonder whether it's that. It's being truthful or having the intention to do justice to your work rather than to... I don't know. With Arthur Golden, it almost feels like he's capitalizing on the culture rather than respecting it.
Yes, but then, yes. No, because I'm just thinking whether or not he would have identified with that, with the idea that he was capitalizing on it. And it's very difficult, right? Because the problem here, I think, is that whenever you are a quote-unquote outsider writing about a certain place, crossing the line into exoticizing and fetishizing a culture and a place is a really difficult one to discern. So I'm thinking here also about a book that I read a little while ago called Out of Africa, which of course then became the movie Out of Africa. But it was actually a memoir by Karen Blixen or Isaac Dinesen. And basically it's her life. It's how she lived in Kenya. And so is there a little bit there about... Is there a lot there, in fact, about colonialism? Is there a certain way of looking at the locals with whom she mixed, with her role within that society? Of course, but it's informed by its time. So there are so many layers, I think, to this whenever we talk about people who, especially, I think, people who were colonizers of country, coming in and writing about a place. E.M. Forster, for instance. It'll never end.
Yeah. Well, I would say that for every Arthur Golden you read, if you also read a Banana Yoshimoto, perhaps you'll be okay.
Yes, and not necessarily reading actual memoirs by actual geishas, because I've tried that. Not fantastic. This is the problem. Once you've read Memoirs of a Geisha and all its, it's very hard to go back to reality.
Well, on that note, that is about all the time we have for this, but we would love to hear from you about how... you celebrate a world full of books for World Book Day. Tell us about the books that help you travel, that help you see the world. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Or you can write to us at buythebook@bfm.my. That brings us to footnotes. And on the vein of traveling through books, we thought it would be fun to now talk about imaginary worlds that books take us to, and essentially the idea of world building when it comes to speculative fiction. As all of you have listened to us most likely know that Lynn and I both read a lot of fiction set in these worlds. So Lynn, do you want to kick us off with some thoughts?
I am going to talk about something specifically for you, Sharmila.
I think I know what's coming.
And since we're talking about world building, I think one of the first books that I really experienced this with was J.R.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. And that is because that book, the guy spends a lot of time describing hobbits. And I think that's an important part about understanding what world building actually does and the kind of patience that it requires on both the side of the writer as well as the uninitiated reader. Because if you read a fair amount of fantasy, speculative fiction and the like, then you know roughly what to expect. You know that when you're introduced to a certain world, depending on the style of the author, you will be introduced to things as characters encounter them. The other way of doing it is the Tolkien way, which mm-hmm. is to tell you upfront, almost like a dictionary, here is what you expect. Mm-hmm. Hobbits need 11s.
Here is an index of things that you need to know.
Pretty much. And of course, he of course does in fact have those appendices. And you can read more about that if you want. But even the early chapter, actually discussing just what are hobbits, that goes on, you know, and that is really detailed. You learn a lot about their feet. You learn a lot about their eating habits, about their social habits, about how long they live, about how they live. And that sets you up because the hobbits are our heroes and you are going to be spending a lot of time with hobbits. And when I say a lot, I mean a lot.
Yes.
And so that, I think, is one way of building a world. And that world has been so rich for us for so many years. You know, so many people have learned Elvish. So many people have visited New Zealand. I just thought of, the minute we talked about world building, I thought Tolkien.
Well, I'm going to match your granddaddy of fantasy with granddaddy of sci-fi. Mm. My introduction to world building was Isaac Asimov. I've talked about him before and how much I love his works. But I think the reason he came to mind was because sci-fi is a peculiar animal in some sense, in that the sci part, the science part, is important. So if you are building a world that's based on, so in his case, the Foundation series, you're talking about a futuristic world where planets have their own governments and have one authority that sort of function as their ruler. Each planet has its own cultures. Each sector in each planet has its own subcultures, and they have their own technology and their own languages and practices. And I used to find, I find it fascinating how he manages to think of these things, but within the realm of possibility. For me, that is impressive.
So I completely get that, because the thing about sci-fi is I don't know enough about the science bit to care.
Yes.
But I know people who know enough about the science bit to care.
Absolutely. But also, I don't necessarily care, but I want it to feel like it might be possible.
Sure.
There has to be that semblance that someone has thought about how all these cogs and gears fit together, and it's someone who knows his stuff. And Asimov was, a scientist in many regards, and he did know his stuff. And you can tell. He gets a little wonky in some of the descriptions as well. Wonky in the sense that he's very detailed. He's often described as not so much a character maker as a world builder. And that often shows in his stories. But I think just, you know, I can imagine, I can understand why his works are so difficult to adapt, because they're so beautifully thought out that you need to make that happen on screen in a way that makes sense as well.
So I've never read any Asimov. I should by now, and especially
I love that I haven't read Tolkien and you haven't read Asimov.
Yeah, I have not, and I know I should. I have some editions on my bookshelves, but it's one of those where when I'm thinking about what, my hand just kind of glides over, and so fine. I think it's about time that I sort of sit down and really try to.
They're very
to work
easy
that out.
Reads, if it helps.
I believe that. I don't know what it is. I think it's the usual thing that gets stuck in my brain where I'm like, it's a classic. It's going to be hard. Move on. But I was thinking while you were speaking about Jules Verne.
Oh yes.
Yeah, just briefly, because in terms of creating beautiful worlds that are scientifically possible. In fact, Jules Verne has been proven right on more than one occasion about how things could have been.
So you know why I don't think of Jules Verne? It's probably because he doesn't do series.
Yes, they're
standalones.
I think
like world building somehow in my mind works better or creates more of an impact when you inhabit it for a while.
Sure. And also because his books took place in the world of his time, did they not? You know, it's just that they had that extra science fiction element to it. But I imagine that Asimov and Verne, you know, there's sort of a through line there.
Well, let us know who your favorite authors are when it comes to world building. You know, which are the places you escape to when you, well, want to get away from reality? Or alternatively, tell us the books that have helped you travel around the world that we live in. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or write to us at buythebook@bfm.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.